From India's largest newsroom, I'm Arun George, and this is the Times of India podcast. That singer Kavi Singh, with one of her latest songs praising Prime Minister Narendra Modi and seeking that he be elected with a higher majority in this national election. Ahead of this election, there have been multiple artists who have released tracks in support of Narendra Modi and the BJP. But many of them are also pop artists in their own right and dabble in what can be called Hindutva pop. Today we're bringing back an episode we'd done some time ago about these Hindutva influencers and their larger social impact.
In reporting on one such hate crime, which had happened in a small town called Gumla, I realized that the hate crime was connected to Ram Navami procession that had sort of taken place. Jharkhand has a history of very, very popular, massive celebrations of Ram Navami, where tens of thousands of people or possibly more sort of throng the streets, and then they have a procession that snakes its way through the town. This was one such procession which almost resulted in a riot. And when I started understanding why it could have been a riot and you know, sort of what was different from the previous years, this one had stopped right outside a mosque, the Jama Masjid of Gumla, which is the main mosque of the town. And just when the procession neared the mosque is when the processionists started playing this particular song whose lyrics had something, you know, on the lines of, "We'll knock the skull cap off the cleric's head." Local Muslims had gathered like they do every year to sort of, you know, garland the processionists, would give them refreshments and stuff. In that moment, the song was played and the tempo suddenly changed. The procession became a mob. They started behaving aggressively. So a lot of Muslims and a lot of Hindus who were not a part of the procession felt very threatened by it, because the crowd had a different energy to it after the music was played. So that is really how I stumbled upon this genre. And I report about how in the book, the police intervenes in that moment and it sort of ensures that the riot doesn't really happen, that there is no clash and the procession goes forward. But they do this by stopping the music. But, you know, the end of that night when the procession nearly turns into a riot is the night when a Muslim man is lynched by some of these processionists later that night.
That's journalist and author Kunal Purohit talking about the incident that prompted him to start going down the rabbit hole of what his book describes as H-pop or Hindutva pop. The book, titled H-pop, The Secretive World of Hindutva Pop Stars, has been published by HarperCollins and is about three people who could also be called influencers in the world of Hindutva culture. One is a singer, the other a poet, and the third is a YouTube star and publisher. In his book, Kunal Purohit traces the rise of these three personalities, their motivations, and their effects on society. He spoke with my colleague Jairaj Singh and me about how big the genre is, what he discovered about the three people he profiled, and why he worries about the rise of this genre of culture.
How big is this genre? What kind of traction does it see? Who are they catering to?
They're extremely popular as you go deeper within the country. And I've seen this firsthand repeatedly, how whenever I would travel to, you know, some of these places, say, you know, villages and towns in UP or in Jharkhand, songs that I've never heard of before, even though I've been connected to those regions because I've kept reporting on them, songs that I've never heard before would, you know, suddenly be everywhere. You travel in buses, you'd hear them, you know, you'd be in cars, you know, people would be playing it. In terms of the artists, because it has really taken off and because it has that kind of popularity, we're increasingly seeing more and more artists wanting to emulate others who already made it, right? So they're seeing that there is this commercial success attached to this kind of music, you know, where you can often indulge in very hateful sort of rhetoric against your own fellow citizens, against critics, as I said, opposition politicians, sometimes against Pakistan. You can rabble rouse, you can stoke these jingoistic, hyper-nationalistic sentiments, and you get a lot of takers. So I report in my book about how the principal singer that I'm talking about, Kavi Singh, and my book is divided into three sections and sort of looks at three different characters. The singer Kavi Singh is essentially a singer who starts off her career in 2019 And the first song that she creates is the song about the Pulwama terror attack, you know, a day after the attack happens. And the song is extremely problematic because it sort of, you know, seeks to sort of stoke these sentiments of anger about Kashmiri Muslims. It says, let's not blame Pakistan for the attack. Let's blame people who are living within and amongst us, right? So she does that, and that song gets her incredible amount of fame and success. But after that, she starts doing songs which are, you know, seemingly benign about voter awareness, about how all of us must exercise our right to vote. She does stuff about how the history of India is glorious. And there are very few political sort of punches in there. But what happens is she sees her graph declining, right? So she reaches the highs that the Pulwama song gave her. And then suddenly she's saying, you know, hang on, what's happening? Because I wrote that song and I sort of finished recording that Pulwama song in a day. And now I'm taking so much longer to read more and create better, seemingly better songs about better topics. But I'm not finding any takers for it. At that point, she turns back to the Hindutva agenda. And then her next song is a full throttle Hindutva song. So essentially, I feel like somewhere these experiences show that there is immense amount of popularity and success in this genre, which will encourage other people to take up the genre and sort of, you know, try and claim some of that success.
I just want to ask one thing, which is, you know, you document a musician, a poet, and a sort of thought influencer. Why these three guys? When, like you said, there's a whole ecosystem out there right now.
Because the book came out of ground reporting across all of these different places, I was very certain that I wanted to look at the offline worlds and not just the online. I think a lot of our reporting around the Hindu right-wing ecosystem has been centered around the online world, but I wanted it to focus on people who were doing things on the ground, right? And all the three characters, they're all doing things which are firmly on the ground, which is, you know, about going into these sort of, you know, these towns, these villages, and being able to influence people directly. They're not relying on the internet alone, because that would then again limit, to some extent, it would limit their reach. So Kavi Singh, for instance, I mean, especially before COVID, she was doing a lot of events where she would go and perform as a singer. Kamal Agnet is constantly crisscrossing the country, going to different states, different cities. He's traveling most part of the month.
वे निश्चित ही इस देश के बड़े होंगे, तो आप उनका चित्र 2000 के नोट पर छाप दीजिए। वे और भी बड़े होंगे, तो 500 के नोट पर उनका चित्र छाप दीजिए। वे और भी बड़े होंगे, तो आप 200 के नोट पर उनका चित्र छाप दीजिए। वे और भी बड़े हों, तो आप 100 के नोट पर उनका चित्र छाप दीजिए। लेकिन एक प्रश्न रखना चाहता हूँ, क्या वीर चंद्रशेखर आजाद का बलिदान इतना कमजोर था कि आप उन्हें 10, 20 और 50 के नोट पर नहीं छाप सके?
Similarly with Sandeep Dev, you know, he started his publishing house. His books are shipped across the country and also outside of the country.
So mera kaam yahi sanatan punarjagran ka, ye jindagi bhar chalne wala hai, ye nahi hatne wala hai. Bahut acche se party run ho jayegi to fir main isi kaam hai aur main isi kaam mein laga hi hua hu, abhi bhi laga hu.
I know people in the diaspora who are also patrons of him, and I mentioned some of this in the book. So I see that there were these very, very definite presence that they were all trying to create in the offline. And I think that was what drew me the most to all of them.
In your book, you know, your characters, I think as you've described them somewhere, are all as if this in the forefront of leading a cultural war in India. How have they come to ascribe the viewpoints that they do? Are they merely a product of a failed liberal India?
This was a question that I would always carry when I would go reporting to these places and meet some of these people. Just trying to understand where it came from. When I was reporting hate crimes, I would realize that there was a process that led to the hate crime being committed. Similarly, there is a process that leads to a person being radicalized into this ideology and into any ideology for that matter. So a very extensive part of my book deals with their early lives. I found that all of the three had very specific reasons why they became what they did. The ideology was not an accident in that sense. It almost felt like a series of events that led them to finally Take refuge in the Hindu right-wing ideology. And I'll give you a short example of this is Kamal Agne, the poet that I talk about, right? I mean, he's now writing some of the most sort of hardline poetry on all of the stuff that we've spoken. But at some point in his life, he was a guy who believed in secular values. He didn't really care too much about, I mean, he went to the Shakha, but he didn't really ever associate himself with the ideological belief system that the Shakha would have. His father's best friend was a Muslim. The families were so close. They would go and eat in each other's homes. They would constantly visit each other. Kamal told me how he would sort of touch his father's friend's feet whenever the Muslim friend would come home. And at some point, the friendship between his father and the Muslim friend broke off. Because the Muslim friend apparently refused to return, a shop that Kamal's father had leased to him out of good faith. So Kamal's father felt this deep sense of betrayal from his Muslim friend. And Kamal could see his father struggling in that moment, right? Because your best friend has now betrayed you. He couldn't at that point make sense of what was happening. But maybe a few years later, when he came in contact with the Hindu right-wing ideology, he started seeing a pattern, right? He started seeing an explanation for what could have happened, because here was an ideology which told him that all Muslims, are typically exactly doing that. They will betray you at some point. They are true only to their religion. They are not here to have to make friends. They are not here to make acquaintances. They're only here to sort of further the cause of their religion. And suddenly for Kamal, it started making sense. So in all the three characters, personal traumas and personal memories of early childhood, experiences with sometimes Muslims, with sometimes, diverse communities, played a very direct role in them finally accepting and sort of, sympathizing with the Hindu right-wing ideology. And that is what is very fascinating about being able to talk to them and understanding their early lives.
And with the Kavi Singh, her music is not the kind you play at a procession, right? It's far more muted. It's, I don't know if you can call it that, but more like an Indian country music kind of thing. How does it differ from the stuff that actually makes it to processions? Or are we seeing like a remixed version of it that goes into a procession and the YouTube version is a more sanitized version?
So what's interesting, Arun, I found that there are so many different versions of some of these songs that I found it very difficult to actually trace the original song. So now if I search for some of these songs, I'll just get, Bajrang Dal version. I'll just get a DJ something version. I'll get a trance beat version. And I think what it does, as you said, is that it then is able to cater to so many different audiences, right? For someone who just wants to listen to it while they're driving, they'll just listen to maybe Kavi Singh's original songs and original compositions, which are like any other sort of benign sounding pop culture music. But if you want to, sort of use the words and use the tempo, then you maybe have a DJ who does a complete spin and sort of reorients the song towards that audience. So you often see that. It's funny how some of the most popular songs in those processions, actually, if you go to listen to the original versions, they're very much like what you've said about Kavi Singh. They're all pretty, pretty sort of slow songs which talk about the ideals of Hindutva, talks about enemies. But then once people start liking these songs is when they're picked up by individual DJs, sometimes by some of these outfits, and they're refashioned to suit those sort of agendas. I keep saying that, the art is highly malleable. It's being used in various different spaces. And I think that is what also makes it so much more insidious and so much more powerful.
And are they also aware of the potential of harm and violence that can emanate from their words? Or is that the objective?
I think they are far more focused on, on delivering the message. They believe that that is the most important thing. Because as I said, they believe that they're fighting a cultural war. Right. So for them, what matters is going out and sort of, picking up the battle where you left it, the last song or the last poem or the last book. So you pick it up and then you fight some more. It doesn't matter what it does, as long as it's helping the cause in a broader sense. So I don't think they actively, you know, are very worried about the consequences of what could happen, because they see how it is very directly furthering the agenda that they want to further. So for them, that is the bigger win than any other minor inconveniences people might have.
We're back in conversation with author and journalist Kunal Purohit about his book H-Pop, The Secretive World of Hindutva Pop Stars. Like Kunal explained, the furthering of an agenda seems to be the highest priority of those like Kavi Singh, Kamal Agne or Sandeep Deo, the three people he profiles in his book. We asked him about the influence of YouTube on the careers of these three influencers.
How agnostic are, say, a Kamal, a Kavi and a Sandeep of a YouTube, given, like you said, you know, they also do a lot of offline events to build their following. But at the same time, they submit to a YouTube for the reach. How do they balance that?
We also have to sort of take a more critical look of what YouTube does for them. It's not just about the reach, but it's also a very important source of money for them. So YouTube is very actively incentivizing a lot of the hateful content that goes onto its platform. It is rewarding, you know, some of these creators, their virality gets rewarded, and hence the incentive for them to create more hateful content is that much higher. So for all of these guys, what happens is, you know, while they're still looking at building their offline portfolios, you know, where they love the stage, where they want to go and perform, YouTube becomes a thing that constantly also builds up their popularity, but also keeps the money coming in, especially singing and poetry. They're, again, not very financially lucrative per se, right? They're not businesses. I mean, they're not professions where they're earning the big bucks by themselves. They just have to maybe, you know, have a quick video cut with the song. And you know, the video, I mean, I've described it in the book. The process for a video is extremely quick, right? The turnaround can be very, very quick and swift. So, you know, they've realized that they have to master the game. They have to create an online presence. Because that's where the money comes in. That's where the fame and the popularity also comes in. But the other quick point that I also do want to make is how both the offline and the online feed into each other. So for instance, with Kamal, he's going to all of these Kavi Sammelans and performing. And some of the organizers are seeing his stuff online. And they see that he gets virality for a lot of his work. So they get him to perform in shows. But when he performs in shows, you know, he gets newer and newer audiences who see him and say, okay, he's on YouTube, I'm going to go and follow him. So the two are constantly feeding into each other, and they're working in a symbiotic relationship of sorts to ensure that the art and the artist are constantly afloat.
You know, for me, what's striking is, like, also, you know, at least two of the characters, and I'm not going into the names here, but they are very actively looking at sort of political careers, where they are looking at it as a inroad into politics. How much do we take this as just political opportunism? Because there is a ticket at the end of the day, which lies at the end of all this work, right?
My sense is that I think it would be slightly dangerous for us to sort of dismiss it as political opportunism alone, because even though that might be the end result, right, or the desire of some of these characters to enter into the political realm, I think what we need to focus on is the impact that it is creating on the way. The kind of songs that they're constantly creating, the kind of popular culture forms, you know, from poetry to books that are being written, the effects of that work are seeping into our sort of social fabric every single day, possibly every hour. So every time you listen to a song which is talking about this, every time you listen to the poetry, every time you read a Hindutva book, you're absorbing some of that. So there is this slow radicalization that is continuously happening, irrespective of the actual characters themselves. Having said that, yes, there is definitely every chance that many of these characters will be eyeing some sort of an arrangement with the political establishment. And I think it's also this sense of being rewarded, which I see in many of them, right? They feel that they are loyal foot soldiers of the movement, and they deserve a share of the pie because they've helped the movement reach this far. So even if they don't get what they deserve, the sense is that they will continue to do their bit for the ideology, because I think the space that some of them at least have entered is now too deep for them to now withdraw and say, okay, I now don't believe in this anymore.
I'm also curious about the character of Sandeep Deo, only because he exists in a sort of fringe that even a Kamal and a Kavi don't go down, right? Like, you talk about how he turns on Narendra Modi and at some point decides Yogi Adityanath is the man for him. Has that meant any consequences for him in terms of that pivot? Because it's a huge pivot to make in the online creator space in that sense.
It is a very crucial pivot to make for sure, because I think Sandeep Dev, even though he says that he was not affiliated with the BJP apart from a short phase in his life, he still was a dedicated soldier of the Hindutva agenda. So while he was still sometimes critical of the ruling establishment, he was still there to further the cause of Hindutva in ways that would only help the BJP. He is now trying to create a new space. Let me tell you, which does exist, right? But it may not exist in great capacity. It may not exist in great numbers. But that space does exist, because each time I travel to some of these states where the Hindutva agenda is quite dominant, the number of people who've told me that they feel the BJP is now Congress light is staggering. So many people who come and say, you know, but this is fine, we're just waiting for Yogi. You know, we're just waiting for this phase of appeasing minorities to be over. We're waiting for this phase of Sabka Saath, Sabka Vikas, you know, to be over, because we want this to be not Sabka Saath, it has to only be us. They often ask me this. They say, Sabka Saath kyun chahiye? Hamara Saath kafi nahi hai. They might be still tied to the BJP because it's still the closest in terms of, you know, trying to appeal to some of their innermost fears and desires. But there is a sizable population like Sandeep who is on the right of the right in some ways. So that pivot has been problematic for Sandeep. He says that has, you know, taken away quite a few followers of his. His followers who didn't like him abusing or criticizing the BJP and its leaders have all decided to go out of his sort of, you know, sort of umbrella of followers. He's had to suffer consequences because his YouTube channel saw a great dip in numbers. So he's saying that it has cost him quite a bit.
You've been documenting hate crimes for almost the last 8-9 years. You have a sense of, you know, how propaganda, messaging, subliminal messaging, cultural messaging through these songs are playing a role. Do you sense that this so-called Hindutva project is converting more and more people into its bind? Or is it just that the right are turning more right? And I ask this in light that we're in an election year where Hindutva is going to play a major role.
My answer will be somewhat skeptical. I mean, my skepticism really comes from this particular point, that what this pop culture is doing is that it is radicalizing you on an everyday basis without you really understanding that it is meant to do that, right? The most insidious part of Hindutva pop culture is that it is radicalizing you. It is normalizing some of the most hardcore tenets of Hindutva while entertaining you, right? It's not like a hate speech. It's not like a political event. It's not an active process of you participating and you being driven to participate in an event where you say, okay, chalo, I'm here for the hate. You're not, you know, you're here to be entertained. My feeling is that, as I've said in the book as well, that we will see a grimmer phase where we will see, you know, the slow radicalization sort of continuously happen as an ongoing process. What is so interesting about this world that I've sort of, you know, tried to uncover is that it will go on, you know, no matter what the election results are, right? It's like a background tune that is constantly playing. No one from the Hindu right wing, no one from the government, no one from the BJP has to actively be there to become the face of this. They are non-state actors who are doing their jobs. They are reaching millions of people every single day. I don't think any of them have an FIR against them for hurting religious sentiments. They're all under the radar, I mean, and very, very deliberately. So what will happen is that this will be a tune that will constantly be played in the background while everything else, which is rhetoric that the political party will officially tell you about, will just load on top of each other. I think sometimes we sort of think that Hindutva as a project is about making, you know, these sort of rabble-rousing speeches or talking about Hindutva issues. Whereas I think the right-wing ecosystem has gotten smarter. It realizes that all of that is creating bad headlines. It's giving it a bad name. It's, you know, it's giving India and the Indian government and the prime minister a bad name. So rather than indulge in it directly, let's have a form of pop culture which people can listen to at all times in the day while it still does the trick for us. And this is what makes Hindutva pop so, so insidious. So there's really no telling where it then stops.
Today's episode was produced by Jairaj Singh and Sahil Gupta. For a daily spotlight on people, ideas and stories that matter, subscribe to us. We're available on TOI Plus, Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts and all other platforms of your choice. For any news tips, email us at toipodcast@timesinternet.in.